Hello. Thank you for tuning in to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Council for Early Career Athletic Trainers. The views and opinions expressed by speakers, guests, or others who have provided materials to and for this podcast are not necessarily those of the IATA. The IATA assumes no responsibility for, nor endorses any of the comments, recommendations, or materials that are provided. Do you need CEUs? Check out the IATA website where you can find a link to EVP Central, working in collaboration with athletic trainers to continue Indiana's tradition of excellence.
Welcome back to the IATA podcast. My name is Casey Heathenstreet, and I'm your host. And today we are sitting in with, continue our series with catching up with past presidents. And we're lucky enough to have the 12th IATA president, and oddly enough, the 23rd GLADA president and Golden Pinnacle Award winner, Mr. Paul Plummer. So, Paul, if you want to introduce yourself a little bit more.
Absolutely. Now, not sure what all to say to introduce right now what I'm doing with a run of business, PXP Endurance. Try and do all the stuff that we do as an athletic trainer for, I call it the mortals. At the high school level, the collegiate level, the pro level, obviously we work with some very talented athletes. Just try to do those same sort of things for the layperson off the street, whether it's rehab or strength conditioning or even just a little guidance and trying to accomplish a goal.
Okay. We'll get back to that in a few minutes here, but kind of want to start off and just kind of asking you, what was the landscape of athletic training when you took over as president of the IAT? And that's around the 2006 timeframe.
Yeah, there was a lot of things going on back then. There was a desire, a lot of conversation about trying to get reimbursed through insurance for what we do service-wise. A lot of conversation around the country of how to do that. We were fortunate that we had Sue Finkham, who was our reimbursement chair at the time. That was the committee name at the time, as a reimbursement chair and so forth. And she has some contacts within the political realm, and she's going on in the political side herself right now and has kind of left athletic training. But she made some great contacts within Blue Cross Blue Shield. We got introduced to a person to help champion that process for us. And we got that started in 2004, and it took us all until 2010 to get that law passed. Mm-hmm. That was one of the big things. We had a lot of things around education. A lot of Katie and KHEP and Joint Review Committee stuff. Again, historical name changes with the educational process back then. A lot of trying to get that more standardized or continue the process, the evolution of the education. Here in Indiana, we had several students that were coming. And one of the things that we tried to do is to make it more friendly for the students financially. We put some things together where institutions could pay a set amount, and no matter how many students they had, were able to go and get that education, as opposed to relying on the student resources that were many times limited.
Okay. What would you say some of your main accomplishments as the president of the IATA?
I don't know if there was any real big accomplishment. One of the things that happened during that time was a logo change. The logo hadn't been changed in a number of years, and we wanted something new, especially as we're going into some of the legislative pieces. We wanted something fresh and dynamic that we could do. So that happened, and you know, it's been about that same period of time between when it was changed and has been changed recently, which is great, adding things there. Getting some things started with the legislation and getting them started. That was really awesome to get that started. But that process wasn't ever brought to fruition until several president terms later.
Sadly, it's never that quick, as quick as you wanted to put together. Never happens that way.
And there were a lot of collaboration that we do as athletic trainers anyway, but that to watch the board continue with that process was wonderful. A lot of people that championed that to get it across the line many times had to happen and keep that going. So I don't know if there's any real accomplishments that truly happened. I do like the opportunity that the student numbers in education grew a lot during that time. Mm-hmm. That's one of my I'm not sure what the best word is, soapbox or drives is that education, getting the students involved and showing them that they can have influence in it and they can be part of it and take the blinders off many times of there's so many things that we as an athletic trainer can do that sometimes just isn't recognized by people who don't understand what athletic training is.
Mm-hmm. So I will have to say I was definitely one of those cohorts coming in, and that's right around the time that I started the athletic training education program at IU. So I was definitely one of the recipients of some of that.
Well, good.
What would you say? I think a lot of our listeners probably don't quite know what goes into some of those legislation changes and kind of pushing that legislation. What are some of those, you know, kind of like the, I know we could, you can spend months and months just on that aspect type thing, but what are some of those key pieces that you generally need to have, or that you're really focusing on to try to push some of that legislation through?
I've got a bunch of different perspective stories. I don't know if there's any real answer to that process, but the big piece of this is educating your legislators about what it is that you're trying to get passed, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that happened early on is we wanted to see who was for or against it. And so we put this together, it was proposed, we had an author and that kind of stuff. And the first year we kind of knew it wasn't going to go through, but we were hopeful. Mm-hmm. It was positive. It got responded with, and we had a person who we hadn't approached about it. And she, this legislator was offended that we hadn't approached her because it was a healthcare thing and she thought she was the healthcare person, and she just left it in committee. Mm-hmm. So we learned a lot about the politics of who to approach and how to make that stuff happen. There were some growth things that had to happen about how do we motivate members to reach out and creating templates. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand how to do that. And it's, you know, creating the templates and, you know, educating members of how to talk to a legislator about mm-hmm. the legislation we're trying to educate them on.
Yeah.
Those sort of things are the, I guess, the important things behind it is knowing who to talk to and then having a consistent message.
So making sure everybody goes to those hit the hill days and those legislative days just to continue to kind of push, not push the agenda, but educate as much as possible those legislators and those people in the legislative branch type thing, just exactly what we do and how we do what we do.
It does help. And that attendance and the more numbers you have, the more impact you tend to have. And I also found out that the legislators, when you go to meet with them, one of the first things one of their staff members is going to do is pick up and see if you're even registered to vote. Or if you have voted, and if you haven't, they're going to be less inclined to really listen to you mm-hmm. because your voice, even though you can talk, you're just noise as opposed to being a person who's going to take some action to vote mm-hmm. for them and so forth.
Keep them there. They want to stay there as much as you want to stay where you are. And sometimes
there's a lot of different dynamics that happen there. Yes.
What are some of the things that you really enjoy about the profession of athletic training?
I think the number one thing is things like this, being able to share and interact and try to be a part of the growth, be a part of the environment, be a positive piece of those things. That's what I've enjoyed most about athletic training. It's so diverse in what we are able to do. I mean, we're not pigeonholed, or we don't have to be pigeonholed into certain things. Mm-hmm. And so being able to branch out and find those things to influence or help people be successful, help students become professionals, help professionals become better at their job, help individuals not hurt when they don't have to hurt, or get them back to some activity that they love to do. Just help people achieve the goals.
Okay. Yeah. Just kind of getting those students involved type thing. And that's one of the great things about the IAT moving to this CCAP model instead of the student center, the student representatives, is now we expanded the ability for students to be involved. Kind of the way we have it set up is we have an equal number of students to certifieds, and every single university that has an athletic training program now has a student representative on the CCAT that so we can hopefully create some more, or allow students more of an opportunity to get involved and to continue the mm-hmm. the involvement, and kind of feel like they have a little bit more of a say in change, hopefully, kind of going forward.
That's awesome.
What were some of your favorite memories of athletic training as an athletic trainer?
Relative to IATA
Or just, I mean, just in general. Yeah.
So the thing I loved most was watching somebody who'd been disappointed become someone who was no longer disappointed. And that's, you know, examples of individuals who got hurt, who they're hurting physically, emotionally. They're not sure where to go, and watching that process, helping guide that athlete through that process of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Who do we need to see? What procedures do we need to do? What's the timeline of getting them back, and guiding them through that safely and getting them to return back to the sport, you know, at the same level, or maybe even better, hopefully, that they don't get injured again. That whole process is just, it warms your heart. But the challenge of that is really is a thrill as well. Not only the helping the person, but the challenge of going through that maze or that puzzle. Those are the things that I really love about it.
Yeah, there's not quite much more rewarding than knowing where they've been and seeing them on top, as hard as they've worked and as much of both of you have put time, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into getting them back, type thing. It's always one of the most rewarding things to see them at the pinnacle of what they're doing, type thing, and know you had at least a little bit of a hand in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the most unique experiences that you've had in athletic training?
Well, now we're going to get into some of the sadder things. I think if we go unique, it's going to be some sad stuff. I always told my staff and my students when I was back in college athletics, specifically doing this, that our job was to save lives. Mm-hmm. I lost two. If we take wrestling, for example, back in 96 and 97, wrestlers could lose whatever weight they wanted to lose, however they wanted to lose it. And I had just left, I was at Manchester College. I was there for a number of years. I went to North Carolina and I'd watched the wrestling process. And when I got to North Carolina, I was in charge. I get to be the health like trainer and we're going to make some decisions. I don't like how much they're losing. So I went to our AD and our wrestling coach and said, "Hey, how about we limit how much they can lose?" "Oh, Paul, we can't do that. We can't do that." I'm like, "Somebody's going to get hurt. They're going to get really hurt. Somebody's going to die." Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand what I was saying. I thought I was just using some language to try to influence them, trying to bias something. Well, we had a process where they finally did let me limit it stuff. But it was 10 pounds a week and no more than 6 pounds overnight. And I thought this was a real revolutionary thing. We weighed a kid in who was a freshman. He weighed in at 215 as a freshman during physicals. And so he wanted to wrestle 195. And we had this plan that by October, he'd be down to that weight. Mm-hmm. The night before his first weigh-in, they were going to play West Point. So the night before, I get a phone call about 1 a.m. from athletic director that this individual said an individual had been taken to the hospital by paramedics with a heart issue. Well, this is a healthy wrestler. He's a freshman. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that can't be anything wrong. We get to the ER and I find out that he died 22 minutes ago. Mm. So that was a challenge of what do we do? And, you know, we had that was the first wrestler who died from losing weight. And a couple of weeks later, there was another kid from Wisconsin lacrosse that passed away. And a couple of weeks after that, University of Michigan had a kid pass. And at that point, then we had 3 data points, if you will, and it was time to change the wrestling landscape. And it went on to what it is right now with the weight loss restrictions and so forth. It was a sad time, and unfortunately we had to go through some things there, but hopefully it's been more positive as we have had to have those situations.
Yeah, as someone who works wrestling and going through the weight certification process right now with all of our guys, just knowing, you know, having done research on that whole entire thing, when guys come up and ask me, it's like, "Why do we have to do this?" I'm like, "Well, this is the reason," and you don't want to be the reason we have to change things, and let's not you know, be in that situation as much as I can. And this is the reason why we do it. They think so.
Reduce their risk.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Still a risk. Reduce your risk.
Exactly. And sometimes, as I'm assuming we both know at this point, wrestling coaches are not always the easiest ones to try to get to change their traditional ways in a lot of different aspects. Yeah, sometimes weight cuts one of them.
Yeah, and I hated this when I was younger, and I'm sorry for saying this sort of thing, but this was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And 20 years ago, the culture of wrestling was a little different than it is right now.
Yeah.
And it was really hard to get people to change because there hasn't been a history with it. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of, I'm going to call them fights. They were really not fights. There's arguments, discussions.
Heated discussions. Yeah,
yeah, some of them might have been a little bit more heated. Yeah. But the whole process, that, you know, we as athletic trainers are advocating for student athletes and are willing to discuss those things to whatever level we need to protect our student athletes. That's same with the coaches. They're trying to help encourage their student athletes. And sometimes it's just some cross signals here and there.
Yeah.
One quick story relative to that. We had a coach that he was pretty set in his ways. And, you know, this is how we did it. And it's no one's ever had this issue before. And, well, one of his athletes had this issue. And he for a long time, could not put this together that if they didn't lose that much weight, they would be healthier and more competitive. But as that season went on, he became a strong advocate for that because his kids weren't as sick as what they had been in the past. Mm-hmm. They weren't dehydrated and their immune systems weren't as compromised and they were stronger. They could compete. And it was all those things where sometimes people seeing it is a lot more than just telling people about those processes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get a chance, I get the opportunity to kind of give a presentation to the UIndy students on wrestling and wrestling specific kind of sports medicine. And a lot of that talk is about the weight certification process and why we do it and how we do it and everything else like that. So it's always terrible that, you know, change has to come from tragedy.
Well, there's exactly. And many times that's what has to happen. One of the things that was super positive that we talked about the athletic training profession being supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. This happened. I got back to my office about 4 a.m. and this is happening. We've got kids coming in to weigh in. They think they're going to West Point and we've got to talk to them and all this kind of stuff. I go into the office and the phone has a little red light beeping when I got messages, right? So that's how old this was. It's a long time ago. So I see that it's beeping. I've got messages. I'm like, how would I have messages at this time? Mm-hmm. So I check my messages. I had 2 voicemail messages from other athletic trainers who knew already of our wrestling death and were calling to support me through that process because they know how much what happens. And one of the, Kent Faub was one of those individuals and his words will forever be on my mind. It was one of those things of, hey, Paul, I've been through this. I've had an athlete who has passed away. You're going to think it's your fault. It's not your fault. And, you know, you're welcome to the club. And now that you know that what's happening here, your responsibility now is to pass it on. And it's been one of those things where a lot of people don't understand until they get there of what support they have. And many times if something doesn't go well, we feel like we're responsible and kind of things. And his message to me was, don't take on too much. Mm-hmm. This, we do try to take care of our athletes. We do feel responsible. But sometimes there's a balance, a life balance in there. And you're still loved and you're still good at what you do. And make sure we pass that along.
Yeah. And this is also kind of one of those random interlude things, but also kind of promotes the AT Cares programs that the NATA does, and it's a state level as well. So again, anybody listening wise, if they're having issues or something happens type thing, you can always reach out to AT Cares. And a lot of times AT Cares will reach out to you even before that too. So never feel like anyone's, it's all on your own. There's always people out there that are willing and there to support you as much as possible. And if you need any help, please make sure you reach out to a professional from that standpoint. Or reach out to AT Cares. I know they're trained there to help as best they can.
Yeah, and I would second that, third, fourth, and fifth that. I mean, what happened to me during that time, some of these same individuals are the ones who started AT Cares. It was a less than structured thing. It was just people out of the goodness of the heart doing this. And then they saw the need that it needed to be more structured and got it created, and it's wonderful. Yeah, and that's what the District 4 has done. I was in District 3 at the time, mm-hmm. and you know, all these people from District 4 are calling me and supporting me, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, and I know it's a national program, but it's kind of states, you know, each state has their own kind of process for it. So kind of going back to what, maybe it's a little bit of a lighter note as we're talking type thing. So one of the, kind of our next question is, what are you up to now? And you had mentioned the PXP endurance, kind of working with that, mortal athlete, as you put it a little earlier, sure. type thing.
I work with everybody from third grade and third grade is kind of a subjective place in there. It's a maturity level with that age group. And I've got some 80-year-olds.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of what we do, we try to make sure that they've got proper form and technique. And if it's a third grader, I'm teaching a motor development type skills. If they're an older individual, sometimes I'm helping remind them of what their form should be and get those motor patterns back and so forth. But mm-hmm. that's the whole process. And then whatever goal they want to do. Our tagline of "Your goal is your success" was created because what do you want to do? Yeah. Great. Let's go do that and do that safely.
Yeah.
I tease people. People ask me, "But what does PXP stand for?" You know, Paul Plummer. No, it really doesn't. No. And I tongue in cheek kind of tell them that I'm like Prince. I'm a symbol. PXP is the symbol of what I'm trying to accomplish. It can stand for Paul Plummer if you'd like it to. It can stand for power and performance if you'd like it to, or it can just be that symbol.
Okay. And I'm assuming you work and kind of reading online as much as you can, you work mainly with kind of those distance, those runners and kind of triathletes and everything else like that, kind of doing like gait analysis as well as part of those things.
Yes. I need to update my website a little bit. We started out working with endurance athletes. So mm-hmm. individuals doing half marathons, half Ironman events, full Ironman events. And I'm still working with that group,
yeah.
but I'm also working with, I got some junior high kids, cross-country runners who are running 1.8 miles mm-hmm. and we're doing their strength conditioning and trying to help them more solid as they're doing those pieces. I've got some individuals that are in high school and are running 5Ks, and I've got adults doing 5Ks. I've got some people who just want to get fit, mm-hmm. who are just wanting to move again. And then I've got the rehab side where somebody's gotten hurt doing something, whatever it is, and trying to help them get back to some level of activity. So basically all the stuff that we do as athletic trainers in whatever setting we're at, mm-hmm. Just trying to do it for the general population.
Okay. Do you do any, I was kind of reading too, and there's a little bit of a bio on the Clark Group from the Clark Group website. Is that, and I'm pretty sure that's just kind of a consulting firm. Is that something you also kind of keep dabbling in at this time as well?
Absolutely. Yep. So Clark has been awesome. He's very business minded. He's got a bunch of stuff out there trying to help teach people about business. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't remember ever taking a business class as an athletic trainer. And many athletic trainers And many athletic trainers are doing business related activities, mm-hmm. managing budgets, ordering supplies, administrative stuff, HR related stuff. That's all business stuff. And so a lot of times it's kind of flying by the seat of pants or doing what somebody else has done, trying to model those pieces. Clark has done some awesome stuff. He's got a lot of different consultants from a different perspective to help give insights into those. And I know he's created a lot of videos and a lot of different presentations like this. If people haven't seen it, take a look.
I know the Clark Group works with the IATA as well. So they've kind of been continuing to work and very supportive of the athletic training profession and the IATA as a whole. So always like to give to thank them and again, push people towards that. If you have any business, thoughts type thing, that's a great resource to kind of take a look at things.
For certain.
From that. And I know someone had mentioned that you still do like to kind of jump around to some education programs and kind of give a talk here and there. What's that talk usually like?
It really, recently there haven't been any, been busy with PXP, but what I love talking about is that motivational side, encouraging people. A lot of us, we limit ourselves so much, and I'm going to answer this in a roundabout way if I can. I go back to college athletics when I'm hiring staff, hiring an athletic trainer. Maybe it's a new grad or someone else. And I knew how much my budget was. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make up numbers for here for a second. I've got $100,000 in my budget to hire this person.
Okay? That'd be nice.
Yeah. I find the person, I bring him in, and I know I want this individual. And so I'd ask him a question. Early in my career, I'd ask this question, how much is it going to take to get you here? And, you know, what's it going to take to get you here? And I'd watch their face, and they'd think of a big number, and then they start self-negotiating. Well, I want $200,000, but I probably only going to get about 50. So how about I ask for 55?
Yeah.
That's the number they come up with. And so I'm looking at them, and I've got my administrators sitting there, and I can't tell them, like, I've got $100,000. What are you doing? So they self-negotiated themselves out of $45,000. Mm-hmm. So part of that conversation is educating. Why are you self-negotiating?
Yeah.
Give me the opportunity to tell you yes. And so later in my career, I started talking to them a little bit, coaching them on, okay, if you think you're only worth $55,000, I don't want you working for me. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about, you know, how do you see yourself in those places? So I like that kind of conversation. I like I call it the younger professional of kind of sharing the process or experiences of going through a death. And, you know, how do you handle that? Or what do you need to, what are the struggles going through some of that stuff? Or if you're going to build a practice, or if you're going to build a business, you know, some things that to think about or to do there. A lot of us don't think that we have the skills to do X, whatever that X is. Mm-hmm. That's what's holding us back. Well, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You just may not know how to put those things together. That's what I like talking about, encouraging, motivating, helping people achieve their goals.
Okay. And kind of the last kind of question I have for you, kind of from that list type thing, is what advice would you give current athletic training students or those that are thinking about going into that profession?
Welcome. Come on in. Water's fine. I'd start out by asking what they want to do. And most of them would give me a safe goal. Mm-hmm. I want to get a job as an athletic trainer, and they would come up with some scenario that sounds nice. That's a safe goal. Mm-hmm. Then I kind of dig a little deeper. What do you really want to do? Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them may come back with, I want to help people. Yeah, I know. That's how you're in this profession. Of course that is.
Yeah.
But what do you want to do? That's what I'd encourage them to do, is why are you doing this? What's your why on this? What's your motivation? And then use that to figure out where you want to go. What institutions you need to pursue in terms of employment? What kind of setting works best for you? That's the thing. Don't just go through and take whatever is given to you. Be more proactive in what you want to do and control of your future.
Yeah, and it's athletic training profession has grown so much into so many different mm-hmm. avenues at this point. Whether you're looking at your traditional collegiates or high school or pro levels, but now you get more and more into that performing arts, yep. You know, bands and ballet and, you know, dance from that. There's more and more opportunities, you know, that and incredible growth in the industrial side of athletic mm-hmm. training, as well as getting more and more into that tactical athlete and working with fire departments and police departments and the military. And at this point, you know, I feel like when I was going through, you know, school, it was one of those things like you had, you know, high school sports, or you had professional sports. And that's kind of where we were type thing. And, or you can maybe go into and work as a, you know, athletic trainer in a PT clinic and, you know, just kind of help with rehabs type thing. But it seems like it's just exploded in a way.
Yeah. You can do whatever you want. I mean, there are, I would say it's unlimited. Obviously there are some limits.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much unlimited. What do you want to do? Great. Go do that. Mm-hmm. Figure out what it takes to do that. Go do that.
Would you have any advice to anybody trying to get involved in some type of work, you know, at the association level, or just trying to get involved more in athletic training? What advice would you give some of them?
Definitely do it. That's one of the things that a lot of people sit back and they don't think they're good enough or worthy to be involved in an association or leadership. Yes, you are. Just walk up to somebody that's already active, president, the board, whatever, and just introduce yourself. It's a little scary sometimes to do that, to walk up and that kind of stuff, but it will be well worth that process. What does it take to do that stuff? A desire, a little bit of motivation, a little bit of energy, a little bit of time, but you get a lot back from that investment of time and those resources that you put into the efforts and so forth.
I'd have to agree. Getting to talk with some of the pioneers of our industry through this has been a blast, and just learning more and more about it is always a treat. Getting a chance to sit down and talk with everybody.
And speaking of pioneers, I've got one kind of tying that together, talking about pioneers. I'm fresh out of grad school. I did my grad school at Michigan State. I'm at Manchester College my first year. Mm-hmm. I come to the IATA meeting. I don't know anybody. I just know I'm supposed to go to the state meeting because that's what is expected of an athlete trainer, right? Mm-hmm. So I show up and I see this table. There's a banquet going on and there's not very many seats left. And it's up front. And I'm like, I don't want to go up front. I'm trying to find one in the back. And I go sit down up front and I sit down and they're all welcoming me and they've got gray hair and they're trying to chit chat with me. And I have no idea who these guys are. It turns out I'm sitting next to Jack Mansfield, who was at Wabash College. He's now moved out of the area. It was Steve Reisinger. It was Bob Benke. Individuals, when they're chit-chatting about education stuff, and so I'm trying to fit into this conversation, not know who these guys are. And it was one of those things of like they're looking at this young, green, energetic guy, and I'm trying to fit in, and I don't. I don't have the experience on these pieces. But they were so welcoming, pulling me in that they influenced my trajectory, if you will, in terms of leadership and so forth. And the words they had for me was to get involved, be there. It doesn't really truly matter what credentials you have. It doesn't matter what experience you've had, but you've got to get to that effort level of just take the risk. And I sat down because there wasn't any other seats. So I can't say that I really took the risk, but it was one of those fortunate things where those pioneers help shape my future as an athletic trainer.
I have a very kind of awkward, similar path into where I am at this point. I went to advocacy, I hit the Hill Day just to try to be present type thing, and end up meeting at the time, the Young Professionals Committee chair. It's like, just kind of mentions like, hey, if you need any help, let me know. I'd be happy to help you. And he's like, well, send me your information. And from that, and then, I think it was 6-7 months later, I was the chair of that committee. And 3 months later, I'm creating a new committee. And now I'm, the chairperson of this, and I got put on a GLADAD committee from on top of that. So it's one of those crazy things that if I hadn't gone and just kind of introduced, then it was, you never know what would have happened. And we wouldn't, maybe not be in the same situations, but.
So maybe the lesson is you got to be careful who you talk to.
Exactly. Or who you offer to help. Who you offer your services to. Well, Mr. Plummer, Paul, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast here. And it's always great catching up with you and catching up with, all of the IATA presidents. And we look forward to seeing you continue on those journeys down the road and keep looking for PXP endurance, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Casey.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Indiana Athletic Trainers Association podcast, hosted by the Council for Early Career Athletic Trainers. The IATA would like to thank Elite Sponsor, Methodist Sports Medicine, Silver Sponsors, Myotech Sports Medicine and Community Health Network, and Bronze Sponsor, Ultra Ankle. Be sure to follow the IATA on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for information on upcoming events.